This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
It's important we look at the facts.
Why? Why?
Douglas Ross is sounding pretty scared.
Because I believe in independence.
And he clapped like a seal.
Greetings and welcome to another Planet Holyrood. I'm Paul Hutchin, the weary political editor of the Daily Record. Joining me this week are John Ferguson, who's the political editor of the Sunday Mail, and Ben Borland, who's the editor of the Scottish Daily Express. So all I'm going to say is, if you want a quiet life, don't get a job covering Scottish politics. Last week, we had the resignation of Humza Yousaf after 13 inglorious months. This week, we've had the coronation of John Swinney and the announcement of his new cabinet. So let's start with our new First Minister. I'm so old that I actually covered John Swinney's first leadership back in 2000 to 2004. I'm not sure if he's ever forgiven me for the way I covered it, and be fair to say that his leadership collapsed in disaster. But he's back in what might be one of the great political comebacks in Scottish political history. John, just starting with you, I mean, just on the simple fact of John Swinney being the new First Minister, what do you make of it?
I think it's quite extraordinary, isn't it, that you've got this guy who just over a year ago made clear that the last thing in the world he wanted was to really remain in the cabinet, never mind become First Minister. He wanted to see what he called new blood coming through to run the party. Now looks like he was so insistent that that new blood couldn't be Kate Forbes that he'd been forced to take the job himself, and now he's appointed Kate Forbes as his deputy. So go figure. It has to be said that, you know, you can see the logic of the SNP deciding that he was the guy to come in. I think it's clearly that it had a lot to do with the fact that they felt he was the only person that could have kept Kate Forbes out, and there was a bit of a movement against her more widely. But also, he is with some, he's viewed as a safe pair of hands and someone who can kind of bring all the warring factions within the, not only his the SNP group, but probably more importantly, the wider party together. So you can see the logic in choosing him, but I don't think it's going to be too long before he runs into some big problems. He's obviously, he's going to have to pass legislation despite having upset the Greens quite considerably. I think the big test is going to be when it comes down to trying to get a budget through Parliament. I think that's going to be very difficult for him.
Ben, he clearly bought off Kate Forbes with the post of Deputy First Minister and the economy gig. He then managed to persuade that activist Graeme McCormick not to stand after a face-to-face meeting, which lasted over an hour. I bet John Swinney really enjoyed that meeting. It's an hour of his life he'll never get back. Do you think in the context of minority government, he was the only person who could lead the SNP at this time?
He was certainly the best of a rather uninspiring bunch. If we're going to accept that Kate Forbes is probably the most talented of the new breed of politicians in the terms of the minority government, or certainly SNP politicians, in terms of minority government and where they are numbers-wise, that was a non-starter because the Greens just would not accept Kate Forbes as First Minister. So aside from Swinney, you know, Angus Robertson, he was being talked about as the, you know, the future leader just 12 months ago before he pulled out. Clearly, none of the old guard wanted the job, and none of the new faces are either deemed up to it or are said to still be too green. I'm thinking, say, Mary McCallum. Probably some in the SNP might regard her as a future leader, but not at this time. So Swinney looks, and I know he said otherwise, but he looks like a caretaker leader. Whether he stays after the general election, I guess, depends on what the result is. But he doesn't, to me, seem like someone who's going to be leading the SNP after the next Holyrood elections. So whether that's they're in opposition and they have a proper leadership contest this time, or whether they manage to scrape on by their fingernails and get another minority term, I still think almost immediately, if not before the election, Swinney will be gone quite soon after. So like we said last week, at some stage there does need to be a proper debate about the future direction of the party, but clearly they don't want to have it now. And as John said before, the new man is now entirely reliant on the Greens. It's been made clear that there'll be no deals with the Alba Party. I don't think any of the three pro-UK parties are in a mood to cut any deals and vote for any SNP legislation. I think they'd all, as would I think they'd all like to see an election take place before 2026. So I don't think they're going to help. So John Swinney, while he might look like a safe, sensible choice, and I have to say it's come out pretty well for the SNP in terms of the initial sort of PR of this. I think once we get into the realities of trying to run this minority government with only one party that's prepared to support you, and they're driving quite a hard bargain, and they're not entirely impressed with being kicked out of government and then Kate Forbes coming in, I think it's going to be very, very difficult for John Swinney.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Ben, see if you look at the numbers in the Parliament. So the SNP, if they get a full house, they've got 63, and then I think there are 65 opposition MSPs with the PO, take it up to 129. I think the calculation in the Scottish Government is that, sure, it's possible that the right-wing Tories and the left-wing Greens could team up and bring Labour and the Lib Dems with them, and that may very well happen on some occasions. But that's probably going to be quite rare. And so they're thinking that they can maybe pick off a party, maybe keep it light legislatively, and then buy folk off with bits of spending here and there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the last Parliament, the SNP had a minority. I think they had 63 MSPs back then under Nicola Sturgeon, and there was a sort of a very ad hoc deal with the Greens. But the Greens certainly teamed up with the pro-UK parties on several occasions, particularly on votes of confidence, particularly twice on John Swinney himself. I think he lost a vote of no confidence over his handling of the exams debacle during the first lockdown, and then again over his refusal to release legal advice. Did he lose a vote of no confidence? Certainly the Greens voted against the government on these sort of showpiece votes, and that the government weren't obliged to follow Parliament on those occasions. So they were, in effect, they didn't bring the government down. But that there were multiple occasions when the Greens did vote against. So that they are prepared to do it. I think they're in the mood to cause some trouble. I think probably it's so close now to recess, and then we'll be into conference season, and then we'll have a general election. I think it's probably going to be right the way through to December before there's a serious challenge to John Swinney, when he's got to get his budget passed. And that's when push is going to come to shove. I think I have to say, Kate Forbes coming in as Deputy First Minister, John Swinney probably knows, having been deputy to Nicola Sturgeon, that it's not a particularly powerful role. It's kind of, it's almost ceremonial, really. You maybe stand in at FMQs when the First Minister's away, but he's not got a portfolio to run. A far better choice, I think, would have been to make her Finance Secretary, because Fiona Robeson hasn't exactly been particularly inspirational in that role. And I think Kate Forbes would have delivered a far better budget come December. But maybe that's from an Express point of view.
John, clearly bringing Kate back into the cabinet and bringing Ivan McKee in as a junior minister, this was motivated by party unity and party management, having this big tent approach to try and please all the different factions in the group. But is there a danger that in bringing Kate in, giving her the role of Deputy First Minister, if they ditch conversion therapy legislation, if they accept amendments on buffer zones which exempt silent prayer, that they could end up antagonising their left wing, and you know, they could end up losing support from that area?
Yeah, I mean, I think this notion that the SNP amongst the SNP group was terribly divided is quite a strange one. But I'm not sure anyone's really explained exactly, you know, who it was that they have, exactly how they were so divided and on what issues. I think in the main, the SNP MSPs tend to be a fairly compliant bunch. They do what they're told, apart from maybe, you know, three or four of them. So I think that bringing Kate Forbes in and Ivan McKee had a lot more to do with this sort of, you know, psychodrama within the SNP that has to do with Alex Salmond and Nicola Sturgeon and, you know, these two competing forces that feel they need to try to keep each other, or even Alex Salmond and people who have some allegiance to him trying to gain a bit of power within the SNP again, and then a faction that wants to exclude them at all costs. So it's really interesting just to try to unpack exactly what John Swinney means when he talks about a lack of unity. I think he's more talking to something more widely within the party, where there's this divide between the Sturgeonites, if you like, who are very much into what critics would call identity politics, v what Kate Forbes' priorities might be, which is more to concentrate on the economy, potentially maybe bringing income tax down in Scotland more in line with the rest of the UK, and you know, focusing on public services and improving the economy. And I think that's probably what we're going to see happening. Like, I think that there's lots of ways that they're going to upset the Greens now. There's obviously, they can get round the conversion therapy thing just by not doing it. But you saw already yesterday the Greens were hinting that they would be very upset if, for example, the government were to drop the getting rid of peak time fares on the railways. That's a really expensive policy that potentially, not, it's up for review in a few months. If that was discontinued, then that money could be diverted into other things. So I think there's loads of areas where the SNP leadership could potentially fall out with some of their own party, but also maybe build bridges with other parties. But I mean, I think the big picture here is that you're in this crazy situation where you've got a proportional parliament that's designed for parties to do deals. It's designed for different parties to be grown up and to try to put aside the things that they disagree on and find a bit of common ground and other things. But unfortunately, you've got that system imposed in a parliament where all the major parties are used to this first-past-the-post, argy-bargy, where they effectively just refuse to work together. And so I think it's like, yeah, as I've said, the big test is going to be coming the budget, because it's there's so many things that you can disagree with in a budget. There's always a reason not to vote for it. So it's going to be really difficult for John Swinney at that point. But, you know, Anas Sarwar will be understandably enjoying that moment when it comes. But the question will be, how will he fare if he manages to become First Minister and he's the one trying to pass a budget with 63 MSPs or something close to that? It's. I think that the Scottish Parliament is now kind of reverting to the way it was supposed to be, where you had a number of parties who all had quite high support and had and were forced to work together. The problem is they up to now have always refused to work together in any kind of really constructive way, and it's going to make politics very difficult for whoever's notionally in power.
John, I just wanted to a quick detour, because I just was reminded of a detail that was in one of your pieces in the Sunday Mail at the weekend, which was fantastic. I think I've got this right, but obviously this chain of events was triggered by Hummus' decision to boot the Greens out of government. And I think you had a sort of colour piece about what happened behind the scenes. And I think you said that Patrick Harvey and Lorna Slater were brought into Bute House and they were handed a letter by Hamza Youssef in front of the cabinet. And when that happened, the cabinet members started to whoop and cheer and hit on the table. Is that what happened?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I wasn't in the room, but that is what has been told to us by senior Green Party members. I mean, it'd be interesting to know exactly what Hamza said when he handed these letters over. I would imagine, given his character, he would probably have been thanking them for their contribution in some ways, but saying, look, there's no way to continue, so you guys are out, and that there was some whooping and banging on the table. So whether that could have been partly an appreciation of the contribution they'd made, or whether that was, you know, a good riddance kind of spirit that happened, and it's a bit unclear. But I do know that the Greens weren't particularly happy about it. But I do think, though, more widely, a very interesting point is that there's a sort of narrative that's sprung up that the Greens decided that Hamza had to go because of the manner in which he had got rid of them. And yeah, I've also spoken to, you know, very senior Green Party politicians have said that's just not true. They find that quite insulting, that the reason that they decided to vote against Hamza and that vote no confidence was because of the basic fact that he had got rid of them. And, you know, I think that is the reason why they aren't. It's not as if this change of leadership to John Swinney means that the hatchet's been buried and that they'll become compliant friends again.
Ben, we've heard a lot from John Swinney, who let's face it, has been quite a combative politician over the last 17 years of SNP government, not known as a politician who says sorry very easily. He now wants a different style of politics. He wants to reach out to the other parties. He's extended a hand of friendship. The olive branch has been given to Labour, the Tories, Lib Dems, the Greens who were sacked, and also Alibi. What do you make of this newfound belief in consensual politics?
I think it's shockingly two-faced, if I'm being honest. I think the SNP started this kind of this sort of we'll take no lessons. I mean, Humza Yousaf's election slogan was that he wanted a Tory-free Scotland, which when he was said, do you mean free of Tory MPs? He said, no, I mean free of Tory values. He might have said, you know, he might as well have said free of Tory voters, because we all knew that's what he meant. The SNP have, you know, it's a long, long time ago when Alex Salmond first came in with a minority and he worked with Annabel Goldie, and the Tories backed the budget a few times. He worked with the Greens, he worked with the Lib Dems. It was a genuine lesson in how to run a minority government. A lot has changed since then, and all the pro-UK parties and pro-UK voters have had a decade or more of being hectored and told how wrong we are and how we need our minds changing by the SNP, and how we're wrong, they're right. And I just think it's too late, you know, it's too late. The stable door is being slammed shut by John Swinney, and the horse is already galloping across the fields. You can't spend years denigrating and insulting opposition parties, and then suddenly when you find yourself in a minority government and you've upset the only party that was still willing to work with you, you've upset them so much that they won't anymore. You can't suddenly go, oh, let's put all our differences to one side and work together. It's shocking. It really is. It's a very and I mean, there is a way around it. There is a way that the SNP can win support from pro-UK parties, and that's by properly hitting the reset button and having an election. And then let's see where we are after that. But
the Tories are not going to want an early election, though, are they?
Propped up by
Ben,
people.
The Tories won't want an early election. They'll go down big style.
I don't know. The Scottish Tories are buoyant. I mean, clearly...
Not in the polls,
UK
though.
UK-wide...
Labour will go up, Tories will go down. I mean, you know, they may have more leverage after an early election, given that an Asawa would likely be the First Minister. But, I mean, all the polls indicate they would go down to about 20 seats.
They might end up as the third party, I guess, with Labour and the SNP scrapping it out. I mean, the Tories tell me privately they want an election, and Douglas Ross has said publicly... as have many other MSPs, that they want they want to go to the polls. They are confident that there's still, you know, that their fortunes are much higher than perhaps Rishi Sunak's in England and Wales. I mean, whether the Tories want one or not, I think it's a democratic imperative that we have one. I get that, you know, the SNP clamoured for a general election when Liz Truss was replaced by Rishi Sunak. So we're now on to our third prime minister and the second one unelected. We're also now on to our third first minister, the second one that's unelected. I think the key difference is Boris Johnson was elected in 2019 with a big majority. Nicola Sturgeon didn't get a majority in 2021, and yet still, you know, she formed a coalition that no one asked for. We've now had two more first ministers that no one voted for, and we've got around now. We've got 2 years to wait until we can actually have a say in all this. And who knows, we might be on to our fourth first minister by then.
John, the SNP have had a hellish 12, 13 months. They had that toxic leadership campaign. Humza really struggled badly in the job. His departure from office must have been pretty traumatic for people in the SNP as well. And then you had the shenanigans of the last 7 days. But paradoxically, are they not in a better position now than they have been for some time? I mean, Swinney and Forbes, they seem to be a more formidable team than Yousaf and Robeson.
Yeah, I mean, I think the personnel does seem... No, I mean, I think it's slightly unfair on Humza to say... Like, I don't think that he necessarily did a terrible job. I think he was handed a you can't imagine worse circumstances, can you, than the ones that he got the job in. And the last, it was like every other week, something that was completely out with his control happened to stymie his chances of being able to turn the focus onto anything else. But, I mean, yeah, it does seem like that Swinny Forbes does potentially, you're going to get it's a team that can potentially get more done, though. I think that the issue is going to be, have the Greens really been dumped or from government, or are they still, is the SNP going to continue to pander to them that you might have changed the leadership, but the parliamentary arithmetic remains the same, and there's lots of the big problems remain the same. So I don't think it's going to solve all the SNP's problems.
All right, I really do hanker for just one quiet day in Scottish politics. Just maybe a quiet Friday or a quiet Monday. I don't think it's going to happen for some time. Let's go to a good week, bad week, starting with you, Ben.
Just to pick up on something John said there, I nearly went for a good week for Hamza Yousaf because he looks delighted. He looks genuinely really quite pleased to be out of the hot seat. Like some of his photos from spending time at home with his family, there's a smile on his face that you just can't replicate. I don't think I've ever seen anyone look quite so pleased to be forced to resign. I don't think he's enjoyed his past 13 months perhaps as much as he thought he was going to. However, I'm going to say it's been a good week for SNP stitch-ups, because here we are, the three key players, and I think that the question remains is, obviously, John Swinney's the First Minister and the leader of the SNP, but perhaps Nicola Sturgeon is still running the show. Who knows? Hamza Yousaf, again, there looks very pleased to be no longer in the spotlight. They all look very pleased with themselves. They've managed to install a new leader without a membership vote and a new First Minister without an election. So good week if you like stitching up the electorate. Bad week on the same topic, and as you can see, something I feel quite strongly about. It's been a bad week for Scottish democracy because, as discussed previously, we've not got another Holyrood election until May 2026, and I think hiding behind this fixed term Parliaments Act, it's easily amended. I think that there's Alex, just to go back to when Alex Salmond was in minority government, I remember him once threatening to collapse the government and go back to the polls when he couldn't get his budget through. So it can be done. And the people who say, oh, we can't have an election, it's not in the rules, are talking nonsense. Of course it can be done. And I think people want a say in who runs the government.
John, who you got?
So I would go for Jamie Hepburn as having had a bad week. He was the SNP Minister for Independence. John Swinney's axed that role. And so Hepburn's gone. It's kind of unclear whether John Swinney did that because he felt that he didn't want to have that role necessarily, or whether it's just that Jamie Hepburn is such an underwhelming minister. He really is the sort of a classic example of the automaton SNP minister who, he was pretty anonymous in the role. So he'll be disappointed to have lost that job. And in terms of who's had a good week, I would say the Scottish Greens, because you do get the feeling that even though the House agreement's been torn up, they are still in there, kind of pulling the strings, because they've got this power over the SNP, who know that they're probably going to need their support to get things done and to avoid the government falling apart.
Yeah, no, I think they still have influence and power, don't they, even though they're not in government. All right, that wraps it up. Thanks again to Ben and to John. Hope you've enjoyed this episode. Who knows where we'll be next week. I'm presuming John Swinney will still be First Minister and that he won't have resigned by then. I'm sure he's in it for the long haul, as he's made clear on countless occasions. So please tune again next week.
It's important we look at the facts.
Why? Why?
Douglas Ross is sounding pretty scared.
I believe in independence.
And he clapped like a seal.